Good morning. It's 7:49 and you are listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. Today is Friday, May 25th, 2012. I'm Holly Keene and this is Raven News. The Sea Alaska Lands Bill is still active in the U.S. Senate, but it doesn't appear to be moving anywhere soon. Sea Alaska Executive Vice President Rick Harris told the Sitka Assembly on Tuesday that the controversial legislation remains in the U.S. Senate's Energy and Natural Resources Subcommittee on Public Lands and Forests, where it's been exactly for 1 year. The Senate version of the Sea Alaska bill is known as Senate Bill 730. Representative Don Young's version of the bill in the House, House Bill 1408, has already cleared its only committee and may go to the floor either on its own or as part of a larger bill. Both bills would allow the Regional Native Corporation to complete its land selection under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, but Sea Alaska would like lands outside boundaries established in ANCSA. Many of its selections are prime timberlands on Prince of Wales, and many are smaller areas, some around Sitka. Sea Alaska was having its annual Sitka shareholders meeting in Harrigan Centennial Hall on Tuesday, at the same time the Sitka's assembly was meeting. Harris stopped in to speak to the assembly during Persons to be Heard.
I'd like to give you a couple of just quick updates. As you know, our land legislation is still floating around. It hasn't gone away. The key issues are still very much the same, and that's the conveyance of Native cultural sites back to Sea Alaska Corporation. The other item of still some contention is what we call Native future sites. They've actually changed the name now to small parcels just because of some technical issues that came up. So that process is still ongoing. We still don't have a markup scheduled. It's still in front of the Senate Energy Committee, but we're continuing to diligently work to try to find a resolution of those issues.
That's Sea Alaska Vice President Rick Harris speaking to the Sitka Assembly on Tuesday. One of the most controversial Sea Alaska land selections is not part of the current legislation. Sea Alaska selected the area surrounding Redoubt Falls in a separate process shortly after the corporation was formed. Sea Alaska Vice President and General Counsel Jaylene Araujo updated the Assembly on the status of the Redoubt selection, which has been delayed by a color of title petition filed on behalf of the trustees of Sheldon Jackson College.
Based on what we've seen so far, we don't think the claim has much merit, just to be clear. There are some deeds that they have, but they actually are deeds to structures on the property at Redoubt, and they're very clear that it's not conveying any title to land. So, but again, they'll have 30 days to submit what they think is proof of color of title. So we just wanted to make sure you knew about that, but also on a related note, we did have a lot of discussions with the city of Sitka and the Sitka tribe in terms of a memorandum of understanding with regards to the use of Redoubt, and also discussions included for the Forest Service, although they won't likely be a party to the MOU. And I think what we have seen and we think it's really positive is that all the parties are in alignment in terms of their views of how Redoubt should be used. Even if we gain title, I think all parties agree that it should continue to be used the way it's been used for the community of Sitka and for the tribal members here.
Sea Alaska Attorney Jaylene Araujo speaking to the Sitka Assembly last Tuesday. The Assembly had one other visitor. Representative Bill Thomas of Haines was also in town for the Sea Alaska meeting. After three revisions to the state's redistricting map in the past month, Haines again appears likely to be included with Sitka's district. Thomas did not speak formally to the Assembly. He'll have until June 1st to file to run for the new district. The city of Sitka has gone on record in support of efforts to reduce the amount of halibut wasted in Alaska's trawl fisheries. The Sitka Assembly this week unanimously approved asking the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council to lower the cap on trawl bycatch when it meets in Kodiak in June. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
The cap on bycatch for Gulf trawlers has been in place since 1989. It's just over 5 million pounds of halibut per year. Bycatch is the unintentional harvest of another species in a commercial fishery. In this case, trawlers are dragging nets on the ocean bottom for species like pollock and catching quite a few halibut along the way. Those halibut have to be discarded. This presents a problem for the hook and line fishermen who make their living catching halibut. The trawl bycatch used to be a much smaller proportion of the overall amount of halibut caught by commercial fishermen. According to Linda Benkin with the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association, it's not so small anymore.
At this point, the number of halibut that are killed as bycatch on a coastwide basis is equal to the number of halibut that's taken in the directed fishery, in the commercial longline fishery.
Benkin was soliciting the support of the Sitka Assembly, who, though Sitka is home to a large longline fleet, has not often taken a position on federal management issues. Halibut stocks have undergone steep declines over the last few years. Cuts to harvest levels in southeast Alaska have been particularly painful.
We've seen a 75% reduction in the commercial catch limits to allow the stocks to rebuild. There's been a 34% reduction in the allocation for the charter fleet, also to take pressure off the stocks. We hear from sport and subsistence fishermen that they're having difficulty meeting their needs. And over this same time period, there's been no reduction in this bycatch limit.
Benkin served three terms on the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, where she was no stranger to conflict with the trawl fisheries. She was a key player in banning trawlers from southeast waters. She found plenty of support on the Sitka Assembly.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to find any love lost between anybody in Sitka and the trawl fleet.
Tor Christensen is an Assembly member.
Biomass fisheries are dirty. I mean, to me, there's not much difference between a floating monofilament gillnet and a trawler.
Benkin told the Assembly that it had been a long battle, but the council was finally ready to consider cutting the halibut bycatch limit in the Gulf of Alaska by three possible amounts, 5%, 10%, or 15%. Benkin said she thought the cuts should be much deeper, but the trawl fleet was pushing back, arguing that they had not been given the management tools to make significant reductions in bycatch without harming their capacity to fish economically. There are 47 trawlers in the Gulf, many based in Kodiak. There are 1,400 longliners. The economic impact of the declines in halibut stocks and harvests has been widely felt in southeast. Again, Tor Christensen captured the mood of the Assembly.
Yeah, I strongly support this, and I say if there's anything we can do to try and push it below 15%, because I know that the commercial catch has been cut a whole lot more than 15%.
The Assembly resolution, which was sponsored by Mim McConnell and Phyllis Hackett, urges the council to take meaningful action now by reducing Gulf of Alaska halibut bycatch by at least 15%. The vote went quickly for a group that sometimes has trouble finding consensus.
Mr. Esquiro?
Yes.
Mayor Westover?
Yes.
Mr. Reif?
Yes.
Mr. Christensen?
Yes.
Mr. Blake?
Yes.
Mrs. Hackett?
Yes.
Mrs. McConnell?
Yes.
Motion passes.
The North Pacific Fisheries Management Council will take up the issue at its meeting in Kodiak on June 6th. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Long before climate change dominated the headlines in the lower 48, Native elders in Alaska began to notice changes in the environment that were cause for concern. Drying lakes, warming rivers, and thinning permafrost were becoming apparent even in the 1970s. In part three of a five-part series on climate change in the Arctic, reporter Joanna Urich visited some of the Alaskans who first raised warning signals about potential hard times ahead.
It was the 70s, and Larry Mikuliev was living in his hometown in the Pribilof Islands. Elders started pointing out things that were not right.
One day an elder came into my office with a fur seal pelt that had the fat fleshed off of it. And he said, take a look at this. And he showed it towards the light, and you can actually see light through it. And he says, shook his head, he says, something's wrong. This shouldn't be.
As wildlife declines mounted, Mikuliev got the elders together, creating a native think tank in the 80s. Meeting four times a year for 4 years, the Council of Bering Sea Elders discussions outline things that scientists are just now beginning to confirm. Among the concerns elders raised were drying lakes as permafrost melted, allowing the water to seep deeper into the ground.
And if you fly over Alaska, you will see lakes having bathtub rings.
30 years ago, they worried that more beavers building dams, creating slower, shallower rivers, meant the water would get too warm for salmon eggs.
And it was only recently, I think it was last year, that scientists have concluded it's gotten to the point at the peak where 40% of the time the temperature of the Kenai River is too high for salmon eggs to survive.
The elders advise going back to ancient knowledge to get through the predicted hard times. They talked about the ancient information networks that existed along trade routes linking North and South America.
Which is very interesting to me, because they're talking about a long time ago, we don't know when.
Many of the elders Merkulyev listened to are now gone, and he's fast becoming an elder himself. But the idea of a network of natives sharing information has taken form. Natives from Siberia shared work they did to protect walruses hauled out near their village when ice retreated. When the same thing happened on the Alaska side of the Chukchi Sea, Inuit in Point Lay were ready. They took actions to protect the tens of thousands of walruses hauling out near them. Willard Neacock from Point Lay manages the haul-out, rerouting travel to reduce noise, preventing walruses from stampeding and killing each other, something neither state or federal officials had the resources to do.
We want to protect animals that we harvest, so, you know, we won't have to be blamed in case they stampede or get spooked by planes or boats.
Working with state and federal officials, Point Lay rerouted barge traffic to keep from disturbing the animals, and also convinced the Federal Aviation Administration to put flight restrictions over the haul-out. Villagers have changed their own boating patterns to avoid disturbing the animals. Meanwhile, on St. Lawrence Island, the communities of Gamble and Savunga are working to reinstate an antique ordinance, setting their own catch limits and other protections for the island's marine mammals. Perry Pingawi.
We need to have something that's of our own, that was made by our elders in the past, that is working. We all agreed to follow this ordinance, so it might benefit us in the long run.
And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. Today in Sitka, cloudy, patchy fog in the morning with highs around 53. KCAW, Sitka.